The top United Nations court, the International Court of Justice, took up the largest case in its history beginning on December 2nd, hearing the arguments of representatives of Vanuatu and other Pacific Island nations who've been testifying about climate change and how it's threatening their very survival. They demand that major polluting nations be held to account. This case before the ICJ was initiated by a group of Pacific Island law students in 2019 who have persisted with this ambitious undertaking. So, hats off to them. Mike, let's talk about the timing of this case, too. Just 3 weeks after the disappointing outcome at the United Nations COP29 annual conference of parties that did not fulfill the ambitions many brought to it in terms of commitments to address the effects of climate change and the unequal effects worldwide of climate change. Do you want to say anything about how this Court of Justice case differs from these annual COP conferences?
Well, the Conference of Parties was held this year in one of the major oil-producing countries, the city of Baku. And it had the virtue of talking about money at great length. Who owes it? Who is a developed nation? How much is owed for what's happened in the past? To what extent are we custodians for the future? And who's going to pay for it? How about China, which is polluting more than anybody except possibly the US, but it has four times as many people as the US and is creating more than half the world's alternate sources of energy. A lot of sharp questions got asked. The answer was of commitments, which are pretty dubious, of $300 billion, which was a small fraction of the $1.3 trillion that people generally recognized would be necessary to make up for damage done in recent years. But that was all, it was very realpolitik. This is a different animal, this International Court of Justice. What I think it will do.
Before you explain what it will do, can you say a bit about the International Court of Justice, how it differs from the International Criminal Court? We've been covering ICJ and the International Criminal Court quite a bit this past year around Israel. Say a little about what the court, how it's constituted, and what it does.
Well, the ICJ is the main judicial organ of the United Nations, and it's concerned with states. It's not to be confused with the ICC, which prosecutes individuals. It was the ICC that issued warrants for the arrest of Benjamin Netanyahu and officials in Israel and Hamas. But the ICJ issues advisory opinions. They're not really binding on anybody, but they're terrific instruments of preventive diplomacy and ways of articulating and highlighting real problems. The Israel opinion that they issued was based on top-notch briefing done by South Africa, really thorough articulation of the last 80 years of history in Israel with extremely well-organized briefing, both for and against their charges, and it led to stories in every country in the world, and that we can expect the same to emerge from the hearings. They're taking statements from 98 different countries. It is the biggest case they've ever taken, just in terms of volume of participants. And they will issue an advisory opinion on the obligation of states sometime this summer, probably. But they'll deal with questions like, what legal obligations does a state have to fight climate change? Should high-emitting countries be held responsible for the harm they've done in the past? And what is the obligation of a state to safeguard the climate for future generations? They'll issue detailed opinions on these fundamental questions.
Yeah, it's always interested me that aspect of courts with all their limitations and the inequities built into the very structure of legal systems, including ours. But you have to have a good argument, and evidence does matter. in courts. And so I was wondering your sense of the difference between the kind of proceedings that unfold every year where there are a massive number of oil lobbyists that outnumber activists now at COP every year. But it's not just the moral weight of an argument, but how or how they're enforced, but what kinds of evidence and the kind of discourse that can take center stage at the International Court of Justice that gets marginalized or sidelined at many of these, like the Paris Accord, all the way, the whole history of these annual conferences are impressive, but there's a lot of rhetoric too.
Yeah, the UN is relatively free from the immediate interests that are both the strength and the weakness of these COP conferences. As you point out, they're now dominated by oil companies and businesses whose livelihood and whose flourishing in the future, in their mind, depends on continuing to do things that change the climate. So the UN is not so interest driven here. They really can focus on the issue. That's one of the great strengths of the UN, that it's designed to do that, and that every now and then that's exactly what it does. So this hearings will be take place from December 2nd to December 13th. Many of them have already happened, but they contain testimony from all kinds of scientists talking about the ocean, the air, the land, all kinds of people who are directly affected by climate change. There'll be a wide range of witnesses. It'll be very abstract, very intellectual, very mathematical. It'll also be very gritty. So it'll be down in the mud, literally. And there'll be testimony from people who live in places that are in danger of disappearing completely. And they will have this wide array of testimony, of documents, of evidence to consider. And they've got smart people, and they'll write something that will be, I think, the subject of a lot of contention, discussion. And it'll be embraced, it'll be quasi-embraced. It will be a touchstone in this ongoing debate.
And cited by many climate activists around the world. I wanted to add too that you can go on the United Nations website for these specific hearings and watch them. So after they're recorded, you can watch this testimony and it's fascinating. And over the course of the ICJ hearings on South Africa's case against Israel, I watched many of the proceedings, and they're gripping in their own way. There's a kind of formality and a kind of democratic tone to them, where you have the U.S. have their same number of minutes. Like on December 5th, a representative of the United States did not disparage the proceedings, but said, we really think we should rely on diplomacy for this and not institute any new agreements or requirements. That typical response, I'm sure, after Trump comes into office, it'll be a different kind of response. With the representatives for the US at this month, were it was kind of a typical Democratic Party response. It's like, well, it's an existential threat. It's a very big threat, and we're working on it, but not very hard.
Yeah, well, it's what's happening, and it's really the only thing we can do over the next 4 years is to litigate in terms of working with the system and within the system, because the executive branch of government is not going to be a source of anything good. The legislative branch of government is pretty gone, but forum shopping will take place. Just as Trump beat himself down to Lubbock, Texas to file lawsuits, people will go to San Francisco, California to file lawsuits. They'll find judges. And one thing that the Biden administration did that was admirable was appoint a lot of good judges. The Supreme Court Justice, Ketanji Brown, is the best justice has been in quite a while, very articulate, forceful, with great values. There are a lot
Even
of judges.
if issuing minority opinions.
Yeah, exactly. But they are articulated. They're there. They are read and can be read. And she's holding up the flag. So people will be able to go to court, and they are going to court about the climate. The Sabin Institute for Climate Change at Columbia University keeps track of all the litigation, all the constitutional litigation, all the statutory litigation, litigation in this country, litigation around the world. And there are now hundreds of lawsuits of every sort. Lawsuits are now being filed by the other side as well, limiting opinions, trying to limit expression. But lawsuits are being filed by state tort remedies about all the damages done to people. People are being able to articulate now directly how they've been hurt. So a lot of the initial legal hurdles of standing and all the procedural stuff has taken up years, but there will be cases that will be in the news. There will be testimony taken on climate changes cases over the next few years.
So, getting back to your point on Trump and the International Court of Justice, to the extent that this will be like other international agreements, something that the Trump administration, the Republicans will either ignore or disparage and express tremendous disdain, do you have a sense of where that leaves legal arguments from other countries or the legal ground to the extent that the US doesn't participate in this?
Well, there's no enforcement mechanism, so it's not going to be enforced. There's no army at the UN's disposal. They can't order Exxon not to further explore in the jungle. So the Trump will disparage it, but that's all they can do. And people who think whatever Trump disparages should be disparaged will continue to think that. But nobody else will. There is always a margin of people who will be persuaded if the argument is articulated in a clear way with convincing evidence in support of it. I mean, as you said, there's nothing quite so persuasive as something that's as grounded in facts that you can show and connected up with results and consequences. And people will be using all the arts of persuasion in these
Including
legal.
these moving stories from the Pacific Islanders and elsewhere, where they're literally submerged by the oceans engulfing them. And so there's gripping storytelling and experiential knowledge and science grounded in indigenous ways of being close to the earth and what's happening in the world, and moral arguments about a responsibility to live in a different relationship with the natural world around us. So I find these settings are really important. And of course, there's also then the question of how social movements participate in them. And perhaps you could say a bit about that before we stop today, where you were saying a lot of what we have now ahead is fighting through the courts internationally and domestically. But that can take a lot of expertise. There's a lot of minutiae around the law. What's your take on the role of these court cases as they relate to movements of and fighting back against this very right-wing reactionary government that we're now living under soon?
We have to use the tools at hand. And there will be a trial of Luigi. That will be a big trial. There will be ecological trials. And trials have always been in the news. It's true, they're clogged with minutiae, and nobody would want to sit and watch all 8 hours of a day's court proceedings.
Speak for yourself. Fascinating.
But there are excerpts from every day that are
That's
worth.
right.
There are contexts to fit it in. There's differing views, and there will be. We've seen court cases just swallow entirely the whole media, like with the O.J. Simpson case. And there will be climate change proceedings, I think, where money will be on the line and people will be galvanized by persuasive arguments and by poignant anecdotes and by scientific proof. The usual things that persuade people, that have persuaded people for millennia. And like I said, I don't see any other, there will be the streets, which always lay beneath or foundational to movements and changes, will be
And
people
what can happen in the courts? Yeah.
that, and they shape what judges think, they shape how everybody thinks and feels. It will be the presence or absence of social movements and demonstrations. And I think the forum where we will be able to embody that and move forward with that will be the courts. That's all we got.
Yeah. So in the months to come, in the new year, we'll be following the courts and the way that social movements can advance through the courts, and using whatever creative tools that we have. Any words of wisdom or encouragement you want to make as we close for today? You're pretty enthusiastic about the promise of the courts locally and internationally.
Well, it's not so much enthusiasm. I would prefer a House of Representatives that would make a really good budget, but we don't have that. And we don't have any president who's going to do anything that we like. He's going to be very militaristic. He might randomly do things like limiting a combat here that we like, but he will exacerbate combat over there. But I think basically, in terms of what can be done with the existing institutions, the courts are where the only place where we have a play, the only place where we can move ahead, and I think we should use them. There are forums around this country that are receptive to the arguments you and I would like to make. We should find them.
And we'll be following that work in the courts and on the streets. Thanks, Mike. Have a good holiday, however you choose to celebrate.
In the UJAN.